What's up, Conference USA fans? Welcome into another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm your host, Josh Yonas, in here to talk about another very busy week in the Conference USA slate. Lots going on. So thankfully, I have some help. Eric Jones, Associate Director of Communications, joining me once again. Eric, how's it going?
It's going. We're getting through crossover season here. Busy springtime, but it's what we love.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and we're recording this on Tuesday. Hopefully we can get you out of here early. I know you're heading to the Stars game tonight.
So big one tonight.
Yeah. Very big. But like I said, a lot going on across the league right now during our busy spring championship season. We'll start with a little recap. Women's golf, WKU captured their second consecutive CUSA championship, finished 13 over for the tournament. Reagan Ramage took home the individual medalist honors. She shot 3 under during the final round, 5 birdies in the front nine.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
We were all looking at the scorecard. I was like, oh my God, is that real? And yeah, it's like, yeah, yeah. She was going off.
Came out, hungry, ready to claim that individual title. She finished with a tournament low 65 on that final day. WKU once again sweeps the team, the individual medals. Selection show will be this afternoon on the Golf Channel, 3 p.m. Central Time. So we'll find out where WKU is headed for the regional round. Beach volleyball also had their championship conducted over the weekend. Number 5 seed Tulane. We're going to talk a lot about upsets in all of our sports. This was certainly one of the biggest ones over the weekend. Captured their first CUSA beach volleyball championship, upset top seed Florida Atlantic in the championship match. They were 4-0, perfect sweep all the way through this tournament. Swept FAU twice, swept number 2 seed UAB to get to that championship match. So incredible performance for the Green Wave. Molly Trod and Skylar Ensign of Tulane named pair of the championship. They were 2-0 at the top line for the Green Wave. And then they received the number 14 seed. They'll face UCLA in the first round of the NC Beach Volleyball Championship this Friday at 3 p.m. Central. Moving on to men's golf, they are currently going right now out in Texarkana at Texarkana Country Club. They'll be finishing up stroke play today. They'll go on to match play starting tomorrow. Semifinals at 8 a.m. Central on ESPN Plus. Finals will be at 1 p.m. Central on ESPN Plus. So a lot of things to watch, lots of postseason. The last one I got here, tennis selections. We learned yesterday afternoon, evening, number 48 Middle Tennessee men will face number 31 NC State in Athens, Georgia on Friday. Liberty women will face Washington just up the road in Charlottesville at 11 a.m. Eastern Saturday. This will be their first ever NCAA championship appearance. I know we kind of alluded to that when we were recapping the tournament, but still, what an awesome experience for them to be able to go out there and
no doubt.
Compete, you know, in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah, especially just going up the road too and getting to play a team that's traveling across the country. So I'd say they have that in their favor a little bit, and hopefully they come out swinging and can get a first-round upset win.
Yeah, definitely. So that's it for a lot of our championships going on right now. We still got a couple more to go even after this busy slate. We got softball next week. I'll be out there with Dane and Keith and Kelly on our staff up there in Newark, Delaware, and then baseball just a couple weeks after that. So we are getting down to the wire, some of our big, big seasons here. Let's talk a little bit about baseball. We had a wild weekend.
Wild, to say the least. I mean, we have 3 weeks left, 9 games apiece for everybody. We look at the top of the standings here. Jack State, 18-3. They officially clinched a spot in the tournament, the first team to do so. They've been so, so good. That pitching staff is just unbelievable. It's so cool to me to see 3 southpaws, 3 lefties on the bump, mm-hmm. Getting the starts each week. But I got to give Bo Bryan, Stephen Cash, their kudos. I mean, after dropping the series opener to New Mexico State, and we saw that a lot this weekend, some of our top teams dropping the opener to maybe teams they shouldn't be losing to at this time of the year especially, but for Bo Bryan and Stephen Cash to step up and deliver absolute gems on Saturday and Sunday, both pitching shutouts. Bo Bryan, 6 1/3 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts, matching his career high that he set earlier this year. That was on Saturday in a 4-0 shutout win against New Mexico State. On Sunday, going for the series win in the rubber match, Steven Cash goes out and throws up 7 scoreless, strikes out 5. I mean, to go back-to-back shutouts like that, they're currently tied for 3rd in the country with 6 shutout wins this season as a team. I think they're behind Florida and Oregon, who have 7. So, just behind 2 really solid pitching staffs. And this pitching staff is no joke. You even deep in their bullpen, this team is going to be really dangerous come tournament time. And they're gonna show off their depth. And that's what you want to have, late in the year when you're playing 4, 5, 6 games in a week. And it's really going to mean something when you can throw maybe your 5th best bullpen arm and feel confident in those guys. So really excited what Jack State did over the weekend, especially bouncing back again after that Friday night loss.
I'm interested to see. I mean, obviously, pitching depth extremely important, no matter what the format is, what the stakes are. But with us going to this pool play model with the baseball tournament this year, where even if you drop that first one, it's not necessarily a do or die game in the second one. There's still a lot of ways to get to advance into that next round.
For sure.
Just kind of with the format, but certainly, yeah. Again, you're gonna have to win a lot of games in a lot of consecutive days to hoist the trophy. So I think that'll be something that'll definitely play to their favor.
Definitely, I think with this new format too. I mean, there's a lot of things you have to think about. It's obviously very important in seeding-wise because every tiebreaker goes down to, well, the higher seed will win the tiebreaker. I'm looking like if the one seed wins one game, they're basically a shoe-in to make it to that bracket. If you're 7, 8, or 9 seed, you pretty much have to go 2-0 because you're most likely not going to beat those middle teams that have a 1-1 record. If you have a 1-1 record, there's a lot of little – I mean, so much strategy can go into this. It's going to be – fascinating to learn as we move along during that week. But I want to move down to Liberty, kind of the same situation. They're at 15-6 right now, 3 games back of first place to Jacksonville State. They had a rough go about it at the beginning of the weekend too against Delaware, who now has their second win of the season, and 2 of their 2 wins are against DVU and Liberty. So it's a team that can, like, Delaware can hang in.
Yeah.
But I know the record doesn't show, and they're having maybe a rough year in the first year in the league, but gosh, they're in a lot of games, more than you would think. So really good on them to go get that opener at Liberty this weekend. But big on Liberty to bounce back, that they needed that bad, especially with the season they're having. You know, 2 big offensive days on Saturday and Sunday. Jordan Jaffe, hitter of the week this week. He went 10 for 20 last week. I believe 5 extra base hits. He had 14 RBIs, 6 of them coming on Sunday. He was actually...
I think I saw he got NCBWA.
Yep,
national co-hitter of the week. Too,
national so. Co-hitter of the week just went out this afternoon as well. So big week for him. I know they've been waiting for, that a lot of talks on their pitching staff as well, but they've been waiting to get their bats going for a couple of years now in the league, and certainly happy for Jordan, and for him to get those honors is huge. But a big series win for them. They're 3 games back, and then we have a 3-way tie right now in 3rd place. I think the biggest series this past weekend was down in Ruston, Louisiana Tech, Missouri State. Unbelievable showing over the weekend from Louisiana Tech. Coach Burroughs has those guys playing their best baseball at the right time of year right now. They've won their last 4 conference series. They're 10-2 in those games. A huge series sweep. And I think even just the way it ended on Sunday, I'm not going to lie, I turned the game off going into the bottom of the 9th. I was like, all right, Missouri State tacked on a few runs in the top half. It was 8-2 going in the bottom of the 9th. And I come back an hour later and see 9-8 on the finals going. I was like, no, I don't think that can't be right. And, of course, I go back, look through everything, and, Trey Hawsey hit a game-tying homer in the bottom half, and Sebastian Mexico had the walk-off. It was his first weekend back for the Bulldogs, but what a weekend that they had. And we talked about it last week, too. They got this gauntlet of a schedule coming up. They have DVU this weekend, and it's going to be certainly a series to watch, especially when you're looking at the standings here, both Missouri State, La Tech, DVU, all 14-7 now, and a lot of things to shake out. I know some of these teams want to be a top 3 seed, get that first day off in the conference tournament. So that's certainly a lot of shake up there. And Liberty's just a game ahead of them. So Anything can certainly happen. It's exciting stuff to watch right now. I want to give a shout out to Sam Houston too. When they kind of looked like they were out of it a little bit this season, they've won their last two series. They're 5-1 in their last two series. And we got to give Ryan Peterson his kudos. What a performance he had Friday night. He's been doing it just about all season long. Mm-hmm. He had 8 innings, scoreless ball, 9 strikeouts. I believe his ERA is around a 2.4 right now. This guy goes out every Friday night and gives the Bearcats a chance to win. Throwing up zeros almost every inning. Ryan Frandon on the offensive side, he had 3 home runs over the weekend, hit .467 with 7 ribbies. That team is scary to watch right now. They are now 9-12 and also in a 3-way tie. So we got a little bit of a, of what, 5 games separating that 5th and 6th spot in the standings. But WKU, Middle Tennessee, Sam Houston all at 9-12. Kennesaw State, New Mexico State at 8-13. So this weekend, I'm looking at the schedule here. I'm keeping my eye on La Tech and DBU. That's going to be a big one. Jacksonville State at Missouri State. We all know how well Missouri State is at home. But they're going to need a big bounce back weekend after what they went through in Ruston for sure.
Yeah.
So two really good series right there with 4 teams at the top of the league. But then I look at the Liberty and New Mexico State. It's one of those series. It could be kind of a trap series in a sense that it's no one really wants to get themselves in an offensive battle out in Las Cruces because anything can happen, especially when you get a team like New Mexico State coming off 2 shutout losses too. And they're going to want to get the bats going again. And, they're going to get the last chance every single night with the bats in their hands. So, I think that's going to be a really fun series to watch. And then, WKU in Middle Tennessee, the big rivalry there, both at 9-12 right now, both can kind of separate themselves. So certainly some series to watch this weekend. And I'm excited how things are looking at baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. So plenty to shake out, definitely. But yeah, I like seeing that there's a lot of storyline series going on this weekend.
For sure.
And and I think for as wild as baseball was, softball, we saw kind of a lot of the same. And I'll kind of jump in here kind of further down my notes, because we talked about the La Tech sweep on the baseball side at home. They went on the road, probably gave us one of the biggest surprises of the weekend in Lynchburg, pulling off a sweep of Liberty, something that I didn't go back to see the last time someone swept Liberty in Lynchburg, but I do know that they put something out saying it was the first sweep in conference play since 2015. So again, still something that does not happen very often to be able to get them 3 times in a weekend. But they're playing some good ball right now. I think they've won 4 straight, clinched that last tourney spot, and now our tournament field's officially set. We've just got some seeding to figure out this upcoming weekend. But the Bulldogs, 19 walks as a team across the 3 games, just very disciplined at the plate. Gracie Flores, she was our player of the week, knocked in a team high 5 runs. Brianna Campos in the circle, she pitched in all 3 of these games, pitched at least 4 innings.
Wow.
You talk about someone who really played a role. She kind of picked up the pieces in some places, had a good start as well. So just great weekend overall for La Tech. Again, for them to kind of punch that last ticket. So other things that were decided this weekend, still have a lot to decide, but we have our regular season champion, our number 1 seed, Jacksonville State, the Gamecocks, wrapped up the title with a pair of run rule victories over Middle Tennessee. They just continue to see it like a beach ball right now. 15 home runs in their last 7 games. Kaylee Martin homered twice on Saturday. She had the walk-off to secure the run rule. What a great way, right? You're at home, a huge win. You get that kind of walk-off experience to clinch a conference title. Like, couldn't have scripted it any better for them. I know that Julie Boland, their head coach, and the that program's just very excited. You kind of dethrone Liberty for the first time in a couple of years. It really had been all them, right, since they got into the league. But now it's Jacksonville State, top seed. They get to kind of sit back for a little bit. They'll find out who they play following that first day of games on Wednesday. Elsewhere in the league, WKU breezed through a sweep of Kennesaw State. 7 Hilltoppers had a double. multiple RBIs, multiple walks over the weekend. Wow. So, I mean, this was just balanced. Everyone in the lineup was contributing in this one. Completed a 15-0 home slate, only the sixth team in Conference USA history to finish conference play undefeated at home, the first one to do so in 15 games. So unbelievable for them to, you know, kind of – and you expand that out. I think since 2019, there's something like – 72-12 at home in conference play. I mean, just nobody can beat them. They're in Bowling Green. So, but they got to go on the road for a big one this weekend. WKU at Delaware in a key battle for the number two seed in the conference tournament. Blue Hens are 10-2 at home. WKU's 3-6 on the road. And those three series came against three of the top five teams. So they've kind of struggled, you know, and, you know, one of them was, they got swept by Jack State. They dropped a game to New Mexico State, and they dropped a game to Liberty in those series. So, you know, it's and I think two games actually to Liberty. So, you know, it's kind of their last chance to prove themselves. I mean, obviously they're, you know, they're 18-6. They're in a good spot right now. You know, but you look at that 3-6 record against some of the other top teams, they haven't necessarily performed well, in those series. So a chance for them to kind of prove themselves a little bit, you know, their rotation, I've talked about their pitching a lot just in our notes and in past episodes, but Erica Haug, Ryland Smith, you know, Erica's 9-2, 2.20 ERA, Ryland Smith 8-3, with a 2.40 ERA in conference play. So very dominant pitching performances from WKU throughout league play. They go against a very interesting Delaware lineup. You know, they will hit for power. They kind of rely on a lot of, you know, big innings, big plays. Freshman outfielder Ali Nankavell, second in CUSA in average and on base percentage this year. So, you know, they've got their work cut out for them for sure. You know, but I might want to give the edge to this WKU lineup just with how well they're playing. A lot of situational hitting. You know, I kind of mentioned how many girls had drawn, you know, multiple walks, multiple RBIs, right? Everyone's getting in, on these plays. You go 1-9, you have confidence in all nine of those hitters to go up and make a big play for them. So, you know, if they end up in games where it's kind of, you know, more grinding and less of the, you know, slugfest, I think that'll go more the WKU way. And then, you know, they get to stay there, right? They play Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They'll be there ready to play Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on, you know, what their seed, or sorry, Wednesday or Thursday, sure, depending on what their seed is. So, yeah, I mean, we're almost here. It's crazy. We'll have a bracket in, you know, four or five days, come Saturday afternoon. And then, we get going Wednesday at noon, from Delaware. So,
let's go.
Yeah.
And I know y'all's first time out there too. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a lot of, you know, good things so far from, our staff that's been out there. I'm excited to get to campus and check it out and, meet some of the staff, and yeah, it should be a great week in Delaware. But yeah, that's all we have today. You know, didn't even really tease our guest at the beginning of the show, but we do have a very special guest today, joined by former WKU star, current Dallas Renegades quarterback, Austin Reed, who actually came up to the office. You know, he's right here in our backyard playing for the Renegades, lighting up the UFL right now. We decided, hey, we should bring him in to the office to do a great interview. So it was awesome getting to, you know, kind of show him around. I think a couple people on our staff had met him just from, you know, being around the program or for past media days. So, you know, it was cool to get to have him up here. First time we've had a guest in person, really, outside of just our staff. So, great conversation. Looking forward to you guys getting a chance to hear about his journey, his time in the NFL, and kind of his opportunity now where he's at in the UFL. So enjoy this interview with Dallas Renegades quarterback Austin Reed. Welcome back, CUSA Insider fans. We have a very special guest in the office. I think our first in-person guest we've had on the show before. We've got former WKU quarterback Austin Reed, now playing with the Dallas Renegades. Austin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. Got a nice little off day today, so it's no problem at all to be here. It's nice.
Yeah, got you right in our backyard here. So let's start off just kind of talking about what you're doing now. Again, current quarterback for the Dallas Renegades. You've really come out firing in the UFL, leading the league in passing yards per game and touchdowns through four games. What's clicked right away for you in this league?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun. You know, it's been fun to play, to be a starter again. You know, I think offensively we have a lot of talent, a lot of receivers who can go, offensive line that blocks really well, and a scheme that's just fit, that's suited for a quarterback to be in. So it's very similar to my days at Western and what's asked of you to play quarterback there. And so it's been really fun. I think we're, you know, we've started out pretty good, and we have, I feel like we still have a lot of room that we can improve, which is super exciting. But, you know, we've just been, you know, for the most part, firing on all cylinders and just trying to keep it going.
That's awesome. How has this opportunity for you exceeded expectations that you had coming in?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, when you do this, you're obviously, your first expectation is I really hope I'm the starter and I hope I get to play a lot of ball again and I get a ton more reps, you know, because in the NFL, when you're the third, fourth guy, reps are at a premium. You're not getting a ton of them. And so, you know, the amount of reps that I've gotten in a month and a half here in the UFL is way more than I got in 2 years in the NFL. And so it's great to get reps again, to put out film again. And, you know, then with that being said, you know, I always pride myself on being highly productive as a quarterback. And so my goal once I won the job was, hey, I need to go out there and I need to produce and we need to go get wins. And so I feel like we've started pretty good, been able to produce a little bit, and that's been exciting. But like I said, I feel like there's more to accomplish and I'm excited to do that also.
You talk about winning that starting job. So beating out an established starter, Luis Perez, who had been the starter for the last two seasons for the Renegades, what really separated you in that competition?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Luis is a really good player, and Luis was highly productive in the past in the UFL, and he had a really good camp. You know, I just think that there was a belief from Coach Neuheisel and Coach Mazzoni in who I am and what I could do. And I think there was a plan in place for me to come in and you know, if I handled business, win the job. And so, you know, I appreciate the faith that Coach Neuheisel has in me. I think there's a vision there between he and I that involves us winning a lot of games. And then also there's a plan to hopefully get me back to the NFL. And I've just really appreciated that faith that he's had in me. And I think that just played a huge part. And I'm appreciative of Coach Neuheisel for that.
You mentioned kind of the ultimate goal, trying to get back to the NFL. Do you feel like, you know, how much of that was a factor when this opportunity came up to really give you a platform to show, you know, what your capabilities were of being a starting quarterback again?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because, you know, I was kind of on the fence about doing the UFL. I didn't really know if I wanted to do it or not. And my wife, like, kept telling me, like, hey, you should just do it so you have one more good taste of football in your mouth. You know, like one more, like, experience of football that you can say you enjoyed. And you know, if you get back to the NFL, like, that's cool. If you don't, like, at least you got to play football one more time and got to enjoy it. And so that's kind of just been like the goal throughout. You know, I'm a big, you know, Coach Helton used to say all the time when I was at Western, like, team success leads to individual success. And so, like, for me, it's like, hey, I enjoy being the starting quarterback for the Renegades. I'm trying to win as many games as possible. We're trying to win a championship. And then, like, the rest of the stuff will come if it comes, you know, like, I think that's just a byproduct of winning. And so I'm just really enjoying the experience of being a starting quarterback again, of playing a lot of football. And that's kind of just the main goal right now.
How would you describe your personal growth from your days at Western Kentucky through your time with the Bears and now with the Renegades?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I pride myself on always being a highly productive quarterback in all the years I've played football. But to go deeper, you know, I feel like at a certain point in my life, football was everything. And like, football was like, for lack of better words, my God. And it was something that I worshiped, and I, like, football had to be good. And if I didn't play well in a game or we lost a game, like, my whole world crumbled. And now I've just looked at it as like another aspect of my life. And you know, like, at the point I'm at in my career now, I enjoy playing football and I'm very passionate about it, but like, I know where my priorities are. You know, I know that, you know, my faith is the most important thing in my life. And if football was taken away tomorrow, I'd be fine because, you know, I love the Lord. I love my wife and I love my daughters, and those things are in place. And so I've tried to just have a different perspective when it came to football about that, and use it as just another form of worship in my life and a way for me to glorify God and thankful him for everything I've been given. And less about like, what am I trying to accomplish, Austin Reed, throughout football, and more of like, how can I use football in that avenue? And trying, you know, it's a road, and there's bumps and stuff. But yeah, I've tried to be a lot better about that personally.
So first start in the UFL set the league record for single game yards, 376 yards, 3 touchdowns. What did that performance do for your confidence?
Yeah, I mean, when you start good like that, it obviously helps. You know, we had like a, it was funny. I was telling somebody, you know, we had like a 50-yard post. I think it was the first completion I had. And I'm like, when you see that early on in the game, as anybody who's played quarterback, like seeing that kind of a pass early on, like makes you feel like, okay, like it could be one of those kind of days. And so, yeah, I mean, it gave me the confidence to go out there and think like, hey, I can play at this level. You know, a lot of times, especially when you're in the NFL, you're like, hey, am I really like an NFL guy? You know, that imposter syndrome comes in. Like, look at all these NFL dudes. Am I that guy? And then you get here and like, I keep telling people like the UFL is full of a lot of really good football players. Like when we played Houston week one, Damon Arnett started for corner at them and he's a top 20 pick. And so you're like, okay, like, am I really good enough to play at a professional level and produce? Because a lot of really good guys have been good college quarterbacks. Like, am I a pro guy? And you know, you have that confidence, but you just never know when the lights come on, how it's going to happen. And so when you do that early on in a season, it makes you think like, okay, like I belong here. I can produce. And so it just kind of propels you going forward.
You kind of teed me up there. I mean, what's been the biggest difference between, you know, UFL defenses and maybe what you saw at the college level or even what you got a taste of in your time with the Bears?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, when we played in college at Western, I mean, we saw two coverages. You saw 3 double cloud and you saw quarters. Like, nobody played us in man at Western Kentucky because they knew we were going to throw the ball. And everybody said, hey, we know you guys throw the ball 40 times a game. We're going to drop 8. Let's see what you got. Then I go to the NFL and you line up to play against Flores twice a year when you're in Chicago against Minnesota. I mean, he's got Harrison Smith at the line of scrimmage and now Harrison's dropping back to be a deep half safety on the snap. You're like, what in the world is this? And then you get to the UFL and there's like defenses where like teams are kind of trying to be who they are and they want to be gap sound and responsible. And the disguise maybe isn't as prevalent as you see in the NFL. So it's just, you know, I think playing quarterback in general is so about just trusting your eyes. In this day and age, like rarely do teams line up stagnant. Hey, there's one high safety. Safety's already down. Like they're playing 3 buzz. No, like everybody's holding the shell at the beginning of the snap and then they're rotating. And so like as a quarterback, you got to have like a pre-snap plan, but then you also got to be able to process at a high level post-snap. And so, I mean, some of the stuff these defenses are doing these days is crazy. Like defensive coordinators are the wildest people in the world with what they're making up these days, but it's working. Like you see McDonald for Seattle. I'm going off on a tangent, but like defenses are crazy these days. It's wild.
Yeah, no, we love it. No apologies necessary. And I'm sure too, there's a lot of other guys like you that are hungry to prove themselves in the UFL. So I'm sure that that's kind of playing into it too. You have a lot of, there is the team success that's still at play, but there's also a lot of guys that are really, you know, hungry like you are too, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, like a lot of guys, like it is another chance to get back to the NFL. A lot of guys who like either they were a high draft pick and it didn't work out where they were, or like just a guy who like, hey, I played at a smaller school. I got a UDFA chance. I hung on a practice squad for a year or two. And then eventually just like numbers wise, I got pushed out and like, I need to go get film. You see at the quarterback position, but you really see that like at a lot of skill positions. It's cool though. It's interesting. Like if you're a fan of like perseverance and if you're a fan of like guys like finding a way to like make something happen, it's a cool league. And it's a league that's got a lot of character and it's got a lot of like personality. So like it's fun to follow, I think, if you're a neutral.
Oh yeah, definitely. So let's go back to your NFL journey. The experience of signing with the Bears, you know, obviously I know you didn't hear your name on draft night, but you still got that opportunity as a UDFA. What was that moment like, just, you know, being able to say, hey, I'm an NFL quarterback and kind of signing that contract?
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, I would be lying if I said draft day wasn't like tough. Like, you know, like every kid dreams of like getting their name called on draft day and getting drafted. Like that's obviously the goal. But again, like I feel like the Lord made me go as a UDFA and go to Chicago for a reason and for part of my development. And so then once you get to Chicago, you know, obviously guys who are drafted higher probably have more opportunities. But like at the end of the day, like if you perform and you play, you're going to get a chance. And, you know, Shane Waldron, who was our offense coordinator at the time, and Matt Eberflus, you know, really gave me an opportunity my rookie year. allowed me to play a lot in the preseason. And because of that, I was super thankful I was able to stick for a year in Chicago. And going through an NFL season and everything that that entails was like the craziest thing. Like it's, I tell people all the time, whatever you expect to happen in the NFL won't happen. And whatever you won't expect to happen happens. Like it's the most wild reality TV show in the world. But it's the coolest thing. And it was a really awesome experience, you know, because like at the end of the day, like no matter how the rest of this UFL season goes, like I can say, hey, I played in the NFL. Now the goal is to obviously get back and to continue having that experience. But it was definitely cool to at least say like, hey, I've been in the league. And that was an exciting thing for sure.
I'm sure we could do a whole nother episode just on all the takeaways that you had just in your couple years in the NFL with the Bears. But what were some of the biggest things that you really took away from that experience and that you're really applying to, you know, what you're doing now in Dallas?
Yeah, just about being a pro. You know, I thought I knew what it took to be a quarterback when I was at Western Kentucky. And then that's not saying like I was lazy or anything at Western Kentucky, but like there's a whole nother level. Like when I got to Chicago, there was a quarterback there named Brett Rippon. And like I saw the way that he worked and the way that he moved. And he was a UDFA guy that stuck for 4 years in Denver and now has bounced around a couple teams. And I was like, I don't do any of what he's doing. Like the attention to detail, like his pre-snap procedure. And also then like beyond that, he was like the way you learn to control what you can control and like, hey, you may get 4 reps a day as a third string quarterback in the NFL. You got to make those 4 reps count and not give a crap about anything else that happens. And from that, I've just like taken it into this year about like just the process and the preparation that goes into it and just how to handle yourself as a guy who's going to lead an offense. And you just learn the professionalism that comes with the quarterback position. And it's maybe not like some of the generic things that people would think, oh, this is what being a quarterback is. A lot of the stuff is behind the scenes stuff that you just have to do on your own. But it, yeah, I definitely took a lot of that from seeing it around me.
Back to your time at Western Kentucky. When you transferred in from West Florida, what was your mindset just going from, you know, obviously Division II up to the FBS level with a year or two, you know, left to play and left to prove yourself? What went into that decision?
Yeah, I mean, initially when I loved West Florida. And so when I left West Florida, I told my head coach at the time, I told him, hey, like I'm leaving West Florida simply because I don't want to one day, 30 years from now, be like, man, was I good enough to play FBS football? Was I good enough to go play in these big stadiums and against these big schools? Like, I just never wanted to have that regret. And so when I left West Florida, I told myself, I'm like, I'm leaving here to go play FBS football. And so I had a couple opportunities that came in that avenue. And then eventually, you know, Coach Arbuckle and Coach Helton reached out. And obviously Western Kentucky seemed like a perfect fit. Bailey had just done what he had done. I knew I could go into that offense and be highly productive. And it was a program that to me was, hey, you're going to play at Auburn this year. We're going to play at Indiana. You're going to play against a bunch of really good Conference USA schools. You're going to have a chance to play on national TV. Like this is, so to me, it checked every box. And then from that point, one thing I really respected about Coach Helton and Coach Arbuckle is they were like, hey, you're going to get to come here and compete. Like, we're not going to tell you you're going to come here to start. And we're not going to tell you there's no chance you're going to start. Like, if you come here and you play well enough, we'll play you. And so from there, I was like, all right, well, then that's all I could ever ask for. And everything just kind of, every box checked in terms of everything I wanted to do at Western. And so I was just, all right, let's do it.
And I said Division II, actually soon to not be Division II, moving up to the FCS. Have you ever reached out to any of your former coaches just to talk to them about that jump?
I have. That's super exciting. I know they joined the UAC for football, and I want to say it's the Atlantic Sun for everything else. I'm super excited. Obviously, like my first year at West Florida was the fourth year of the program. And so like I obviously wasn't one of the real OGs. Like some of our seniors on that team that we won the national championship, my redshirt freshman year, were guys who literally started the program. And so especially for those guys, I feel like a little bit of, but especially for those guys, like we feel like we like helped grow this like program. And then like we saw it when it's infant stage and now it's like multiple national semifinals, a national championship. Now it's going to move up to Division I. And a lot of people don't know, like, West Florida is a really good athletic school, like, all around, like, mm-hmm. baseball, golf, tennis, basketball, like, softball, like, everything has been extremely productive at this school. So, like, while it's obviously makes sense for the football to move up, I think it's like logistically also makes sense for everything. So I'm obviously a pretty proud alum of the school. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So your 2022 season at WKU, 4,700 plus yards, 40 touchdowns, bowl MVP. How did that year change your view of what your ceiling as a quarterback was?
Yeah, I mean, I came up to Division I with the thought of like, I just want to play big time football. I think I'm good enough to play at this level. I want to go prove to myself that I can play at this level. And, you know, if I go up there and it doesn't work out, then I saw like, hey, I wasn't that kind of a dude. And if I go up there and I do play well, then it like proves to myself that I was. So after that year, I saw like, okay, like I'm pretty sure I can play at this level. Like I think what I'm capable of. And at that point it was like, all right, now the ceiling's the limit. Like I think NFL aspirations aren't crazy to think about. You know, I think that I can go out there and have a good senior year and I can hopefully get drafted. And that was kind of all the goal going into after the year is like, hey, I want to go back to Western. I want to do this whole thing again. And I want to continue proving to myself that I'm the quarterback that I think I am. And that year definitely helped my confidence to know like, okay, like you can play at this level, which was, it was reassuring for sure.
What do you remember most about some of the, you know, record-breaking performances you had there? I'm sure you'll say a lot about, you know, the team success that you guys had, but, you know, near 500-yard bowl game performance and plenty of others that, you know, we could list off. But what do you kind of reflect on most from your time there?
It was fun, man. We were really talented. We had a lot of guys who obviously, like, went other places after the year, which I think spoke to kind of the talent we had. You know, like, we had two offensive linemen that transferred to play big time Power Five football. We had two tight ends that transferred to play Power Five football. And then obviously like what Malachi Corley was. And then we had two receivers who were seniors at the time that I thought were extremely talented. Jalen Hall, Daywood Davis, you know, and Mike Matheson. I could list off every single guy we had on our team. But we were just super talented. And obviously like now you see what Ben Arbuckle's become. Like we had this rookie offensive coordinator who was going to go light college football on fire. It was just special. Like a lot, like sometimes like you have a lot of pieces around like the playing board that just fit and then it makes everything go. And then that's when you have the capabilities of being something special. And so again, my job as a quarterback that season was super easy because we were so talented. I just had to just not find a way to mess it up. And so we were able to be pretty special on offense and do some fun things, but it was just so much fun. Like when you're rolling like that and you guys are so explosive and there's games where it feels like you can't put a toe in the wrong spot, like it's fun. And that season was a lot of fun.
Your path, obviously not traditional, you know, a few transfers, you get a chance in the NFL, you know, now with the Renegades, do you think your journey gives you an edge compared to some of the guys with a more linear path?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I've reiterated how important my faith is and I wouldn't trade anything of my journey. You know, I think the Lord has put me in every single spot that I've been in for a reason. And I truly believe that like every single stop on my journey has been a part of my personal development. And I thank the Lord every day for that. And now, you know, I joke about all the time with my friends, like now it's created this cockroach. Like you can't kill me. I promise you, like you can try, but like you can't. I think sometimes when like guys haven't been through some of that stuff, when things get hard, they're not used to that. And like when things get tough, like I'm like, let's go. Like now we're really getting into it. Like now we really can see who's about it. Like who, when everything's easy, like everybody can do that. Now like stuff's getting difficult. Like can you stick around and like hang through all this? And so I think it's developed, and that's why I'm so thankful for it, because like now I'm so thankful, like obviously in football, it's great, right? But like life's going to get hard. Like football's probably gonna be the easiest thing in my life. And so when life gets hard down the road, I'm so thankful that like when life gets tough, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, what am I going to do? It's like, nah, let's hunker in. Like it's time to go. Stuff's getting difficult. And I'm just super appreciative of that and just trying to keep it going as long as I can. Like as long as football have me, I'm going to keep doing it. And like I said, I'm a cockroach. You're gonna have to find a way to kill me. It's not gonna be on the first or second time you swat at me. So I'm just gonna keep trying to roll.
I like that. What are your goals for the rest of the UFL season? You know, you're 5 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks in now. Still got a couple months left before playoffs start in June. I'm sure the biggest goal is probably a championship, but just for you two personally, what are some of your other goals for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, first goal is to win a championship. That's the number one goal always. I just want to like keep living in the moment. You know, I think it's such a dangerous game to look ahead and always think about like what's next and like how is this affecting how NFL teams are looking at you and like can I throw for this many yards or can I this or that? And, like, it's like, in my opinion, it's like, man, let's just go beat Louisville this week and like let's play really well on offense and then we'll be 4-1 and we'll be in the driver's seat to be in the playoffs. And then after that, we play DC and they're like a really talented team. And once we play them, like, let's focus on that and make sure we're rolling there. So for me, it's like, I just want to take one game at a time. I'm aware that like, I don't know what the future holds. So like, theoretically, this could be the last year I'm ever the starting quarterback of a football team. And so like, I want to enjoy being the starting quarterback of a team and everything that comes with that. And so just trying to be very intentional about being where my feet are and enjoying this year for everything it is.
Yeah. All right. We'll close with a couple, you know, more fun questions. Favorite receiver you've ever played with, college or pro?
Oh, Lord have mercy. You're going to get me in so much trouble. College.
Maybe you can build out, you know, a 3 or 4. You know, if you have to put a, you know, guy on the outside, a slot guy, okay, maybe that'll help.
You just saved me. Yeah. We'll go 4 wide.
Yep.
We'll go 4 wide. We'll go Malachi Corley in the slot. We'll go... Man, you're going to get me in so much trouble. I'm going to go 10 personnel. I need all 4. Yeah. I'm going to go Tyler Vaughn, who I'm playing with right now, outside on the right side. He can play X. I'm going to put my high school receiver, Kareem Brown, from St. Augustine High School at the Z. Anyone who knows Kareem knows why I put him there. That is the man. And then, oh my gosh. The other slot receiver is Tate Leto at West Florida, with Rodney Coates at West Florida coming off the bench. I could not include Rodney Coates. I'm sorry. I know you said one, but I had to. Oh, my gosh. I'm missing so many people.
I know. I can't wait to hear about the texts you get from guys. All right. Best defense you faced in your time at CUSA?
Yeah, real talk. The Troy defenses that John Summerall played.
Okay.
I mean that. Ohio State in 2023 was obviously really talented. Auburn in 2022 was really talented. But like, in all my, obviously growing up in Florida, everybody's a Florida fan. So I keep telling people, like, I promise you, John Summerall is going to get you guys right. Because the 2 times we left playing Troy, we lost by 3 in 22, I think. And then we lost by like 3 in 23. So both tight games. But both times I left those games, I was like, I do not want to play those dudes again. Like, just striking, physical. Yeah, man, those guys were good. Those guys were really good.
Toughest road environment in the league play?
Where did we go that was... You know, I actually have like an interesting answer to this one.
Okay.
We played UTEP on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and it's just weird out there. Like, it's just like you're going in the twilight zone. The lights aren't super bright in the Sun Bowl, so like it's like kind of dim. You're right there on the border. You feel like you're in like out in like in the Wild West, like playing. Like, I'm telling you, we just like, everything was weird about that game. We played them in 23. I tell people all the time, it's like, I just like felt like I was in a fever dream when we played in UTEP. They need to use that to their advantage, because I'm telling you, like, the elevation. Yeah, UTEP was a weird spot to play.
Yeah. Beautiful stadium. Yeah, that's one of our favorites.
It was awesome.
Sure.
It was so cool.
I've never heard about, just kind of some of the other things about the environment.
Yeah, feel like you're in the twilight zone. It's weird.
Okay. Favorite stadium other than, obviously, I know number one's probably the Houch. But other than that, what was your favorite stadium to play in?
Oh, man. I mean, the obvious ones are like the Horseshoe and Jordan-Hare and the 2 times we played there. Obviously, I know they're not in the league anymore, but the Alamo Dome just used to rock.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, when we went there in 22, like, you just can't hear yourself think. Yeah, those are, like, the first couple that come to mind when I think about it. I never got a chance to play, like, at Liberty or anything like that, but I heard that's a good time. But, yeah, probably those when I think of it.
Okay, awesome. Well, Austin, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck the rest of the UFL season and with whatever comes in your football career. We know, like you said, you're a cockroach. It's going to take a lot to kill you. So I'm sure we'll be saying your name for a few more years to come. But thank you again for joining the CUSA Insider.
Yeah, appreciate it. It's been a good time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Austin Reed for taking time out of his busy UFL schedule to come up here and talk about, again, his journey. Lots of great things, you know, just his amazing story. So glad that you guys had a chance to hear that as well. That'll do it here for us. As always, you can stay tuned on all the latest episodes and CUSA news. Listen to us wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and then give us a follow on social media at CUSA Insider Pod on X and Instagram. Always like to hear from our fans as well. Please give us a shout on our social channels. Continue to see some teasers for whoever's coming on next, some highlights from the from past episodes and more. But thank you guys again for joining another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Yonas, signing off.